Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 7th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. Back on solid ground, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I don't know about you, but it was a lot of fun last week. I know we're not going to talk too much about it because we talked about it on the ship, but it was a great time, I thought.
Yeah, definitely our best cruise yet, I think, by almost every yardstick. And the feedback we got after the cruise was overwhelmingly positive, which I always love, and a couple good suggestions for how we can make it better. But I think we had a great group and look forward to seeing them all back. And immediately I'm jumping right into to Baltimore and getting this all set up for that as well, too. So it's amazing. I got our cruise coming. I just got off the ship, and I'm getting ready to go on another one.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we do on the cruise ship is we hold a lot of tournaments. You know, we hold some cheaper ones like $30 sit and goes, you know, one tables. We hold a couple of multi-table tournaments. But one of the things that we usually don't do is we don't guarantee a prize pool on the ship.
Absolutely.
Because you just never know who's going to show up or who's going to want to take their satellite money and run. And so it's not a good business model for a four-day cruise when you only have a certain amount of guests. You know, if you're a big company or a big card room or something, and you know you're going to have a bunch of people coming in every day of the week, you know, all the time, all around the clock, then, you know, you might make up that money if you don't make the guarantee. But for us, really, it's about just having a tournament and not sweating the details. But some people have a little more trouble with guarantees, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the big one everybody's talking about this week is Partouche. I have no idea if that's correct. I mean, I'm still working on English, as everybody knows.
You're close enough. You're close enough.
Don't even think that I'm going to be able to get French down correct. But Partouche poker tour, well-known brand. They have a big tournament in Cannes, France every year. Is it Cannes or Cannes?
Cannes.
I think it's one of those you could say either way.
Cannes.
Like Creek and Crick.
Yeah, I think you can say either way.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm going to say Cannes. You
okay.
Can say Cannes because you're more rarefied than I am. But the poker tour event coming up, actually going on now. They got 557 people to play, which that sounds amazing, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that folks are saying their website last year, said guaranteed prize pool of 5 million euros. Well, even though 557 people sounds like a lot, it only amounts to 4.2 million euros. And so now the organizers are saying that, quote, at no time did we say that 5 million euros was secured when it was guaranteed in writing. And they're not coughing up the extra 800,000 euros. And, of course, you know, when you do that, poker players tend not to overlook it.
Yeah, you know, I often wondered what the backlash would be, and I guess we're finding out now. People are just up in arms, but I wonder if that'll still keep them from going back. But it is something that is precarious. We've talked about it. I did a cover story on guaranteed tournaments, so we've heard from a lot of different people about it. And if you missed a guarantee, sometimes it's a good thing. But I think Partouche thought 800 grand's a lot of money to make it a good thing, and said, you know,
absolutely,
we never guaranteed this.
Yeah, and what's interesting is there's a lot of he said, she said going on, and, you know, you got, there's some poker pros that are, like, you know, grabbing screenshots of their website and looking for the cachet, the pages to prove that they did, and so, I mean, it's a little added wrinkle here. It's not as if there's something where there was, at least from what I've read, something actual physically in writing other than just what's on the website, and
right.
It's a little bit different, but at the same time, you know, I was asked about this on Fifth Street Radio last night, and, you know, we both know that there's at least one room in Florida that yanked a guarantee years ago, and they haven't got a tournament off the ground ever since then.
Yeah, and
it's just devastating. It's one of the bigger violations of trust.
It's a tough line to toe, and I think just before we went on the cruise too, there was some stuff about the Hard Rock down south about, you know, they weren't guaranteeing it because of the act of God thing that they call it, you know, where and I wonder, I think that's a little different situation. That's not something that they control. I mean, do you really hold a guarantee for the 8 guys who can show up at your casino that day because they can brave the flooded waters around their house or whatever? And I don't think that's fair, but the Partouche thing, if they indeed guaranteed it, then that's, you know, that's just dubious, and that's something that will haunt them for years to come, I think.
Yeah, I certainly made a distinction between the weather-related ones and, obviously I know there's poker players out there that won't. We don't care, but, and that's unfortunate, I think, because, I mean, it's a safety issue. I don't think it's a financially driven decision at that point. You know, if you're forcing people to drive through raging floodwaters to get to a poker tournament, you're putting yourself at risk. You want to do that. So it's a little different, but certainly that's not the case. As far as I can tell, there's no tropical storms in Cannes/Con right now. And, what's interesting to me is, obviously I haven't traveled overseas. I don't know, every culture is a little bit different. So maybe this is not necessarily a big thing for European players. Maybe it's a terribly huge thing for European players. I don't know. But I do know American players, and I would be surprised if this doesn't have some kind of negative effect going on in the future for at least Yankees that are going over there.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of flying across the Atlantic and spend that kind of money to fly and put yourself up in one of the most expensive, I'm sure, most expensive European cities there are,
it's probably not a Motel 6 in Canada.
Yeah, you're going to want to make sure that the money you said you're playing for, you're going to be playing for. So it's too bad, too. It's unfortunate. I know that people usually look at the Partouche as one of the better stops over there and one of the more exciting things to do. So it is a shame. I mean, again, we don't know for sure if they're right or who's right. Sometimes they put, even like in the ads in our magazine, sometimes they'll put guarantee, but then there's the little asterisk that says based on a X amount of field or something. So maybe they got their signals crossed and someone didn't put the asterisk on their website and now they got to live by it or try to, but players felt they should have lived by it. And so it's a tough situation. And I feel bad for the players who went over there expecting an overlay, or not expecting one, but when they realized it wasn't going to be a full field, hoping for that overlay and then not getting it. It's a big disappointment. I mean, they're still playing for $4.2 million.
Yeah.
So let's not get crazy here, but that extra $800,000, that's a few more spots, or a lot more money up front. So it's unfortunate.
Fair.
Well, speaking of unfortunate, last night the World Series is on. We're taping on a Thursday this week, and usually the World Series is on a Tuesday, but I don't know if it's because of the U.S. Open or what, but they had it on Wednesday this week. And I have been watching it. I have to admit, I have been watching the World Series on TV, and there was this hand. I won't mention any of the players' names. It's not necessary. But you can't believe what happens. It's the last hand, essentially, of the day. They make the announcement saying, dealers, whatever, this is your last hand, or whatever it is, or last 10 minutes or something. But basically, it's the last hand, and it's, they even make mention of it. The player who's under the gun, his mic is on, and he's like, you know what? He said, I would be stupid to play this hand. Before he even sees the cards, okay, they're just being dealt. He hasn't looked at the card yet. He's got $300,000 in front of him. He's got more than 30 big blinds, and he's under the gun. He says, I would need better than aces to play this hand, if that were possible. That's what he says. And everybody chuckles, or whatever. He looks down at ace of hearts, king of hearts, okay? And he goes all in.
Wow, 30 big blinds.
More than 30 big blinds. And, of course, he says it would have to be better than aces, which we know isn't impossible. So for him to go all in, what does he have? 2 lucky charms from, blue moons from the cereal? I mean, what is this guy thinking? So ace of hearts, king of hearts, he goes all in. He figures last hand, no one's going to call him. No one wants to go broke or be devastated
heading into day five, because this is day four of the tournament. And a guy with 600,000, and he's from Orlando too, by the way, I think he's in seat 10, wakes up with aces. And of course he's got them covered, and of course he calls, and they're already, and they're talking to each other while there's still like three guys left to act. The guy's like, "You got aces?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, I got aces." And they're like, "You got aces?" They're like, guys, there's still three more people in the hand, you know, waiting to act. But they knew no one else was going to call. There was just no way. And sure enough, aces versus ace of hearts, king of hearts. And yes, the flop comes with two hearts. The turn is the five of hearts. The ace king of hearts makes a flush. Turns out ace king of hearts is better than aces. And he doubles up to like 630 grand or something, while the other guy's stack is cut in half and is absolutely devastated. How do you do that? I mean, you know what? If we're you know, always getting flamed for how we play hands and how we think about stuff and everything, who would go all in? If I said to you, on hand of the week, all right, I'm under the gun, it's the last hand before the bubble, I have ace king of hearts, and I shove for 35 big blinds, how did I do so far? I'd be lambasted, right? I mean, this is a professional player who's from Canada, well-respected, does very well on tour, and he just shoves for no... Now, I would imagine if you play this hand out the way conventional wisdom would go, they probably would have gotten it all in anyway.
Probably.
I think. Because after that flop, aces would have been obviously an over to a somewhat harmless board. Two hearts, clearly you'd want to protect your hand. So this guy would bet out, and then the other guy would raise, and then who knows? Maybe they would have gotten 300,000 each in. I don't know. You know, these pros always profess they're playing small ball and stuff. But what possesses somebody to go all in 300,000? You know, there is that chance that someone could get a big hand and call you.
Well, you know, in poker, it depends, Chris.
Yes, it depends.
Well, I don't know, maybe is this like seventh level table chatter going on here? Hey, I'm going to have better than aces.
And then he goes
all in. All in. All right, well, you must have aces. Get out of my way, pick up some blinds. And you know, I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, you're right. Conventionally, it is out of the norm. But then again, I think you have to play out of the norm to get through 6,000 people, right?
Yeah, it's just, to me, though, I mean, this guy, like, even all during the episode, he was generally short-stacked and, you know, kind of like, hey, let's move it along. I'm short here. I need to, you know, I wait for this tournament once a year, blah, blah, blah. I need to get in. And then all of a sudden, he's got a decent stack now, and he puts it all on the line with ace-king. And no matter what he says before that, I mean, for him to go all in, yeah, they may have thought he had aces or something, but there's still a chance that someone does have aces, and you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, and then he gets lucky and makes a flush. It's just, to me, not one person watching that show would think that was a great move. I don't think there's an impossibility of that. I mean, if they...
It would be one guy.
Yeah, the one guy who... Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the other guy must have been...
The second guy, but yeah.
The other guy must have been steaming. Absolutely steaming.
Hey, but you know what? That's poker.
That is poker, and that's why we love the game, I guess. But I have been enjoying the broadcast a little bit, and, you know, they're on day four now, so it's getting close. You know, you got to remember that the Octo-9, it's not November, it's in October, so it's coming up pretty quick, and we'll have a world champion pretty soon.
Well, you know, we always get some great suggestions from our listeners on show topics, and so Christy, who in her own right is probably one of our super fans, I would say, from Maine, she wrote us a little bit ago suggesting a topic for a show, so we're going to put it out there, and you know, sometimes we put these things out there, and you can hear the crickets. And then other times, you know, we get a lot of feedback. So we'll see which way we go this time. But here's what she wrote. She's like, I have an idea for a show sometime if you can make it work. How about a quote-unquote super fan roundtable like Howard Stern used to do on his Sirius Radio? Now, first of all, I don't think I want to be taking their clothes off or throwing salami on their asses or anything, right? but beyond all that, sure, all right, why not? And so she continues, you can have the radio show regulars talk with you both interested in being one of the super. So folks, if you're interested in being one of our quote unquote super fans on a Super Fan Annie Up show, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Or, you know, suggest some super fans, and maybe we'll reach out to them, and, you know, because, you know, sometimes they can be shy. And, you know, if we get enough interest, we'll put this bad boy together and see how it turns out. I think it would be kind of cool to have some fan favorites and super fans on a show just kind of rapping about poker.
I think it would be awesome. I think the logistics would be a little difficult, but I think we might be able to pull it off. I mean, generally, if you're interested in doing this, we tape it. Generally around 11 a.m. on a Thursday, so on Eastern time. So you're going to have to take that into consideration. You might have to take some finagling to get us all around the right time or whatever. But yeah, the other difficult thing is I remember you remember the Lord Admiral, right? The trendsetters of this whole podcast thing that we started with them, and they used to do that too. They would invite some of their friends over, some of the guys that have as regular guests, and they would be on the show and they'd do sort of a roundtable. But the thing was, I think they all pretty much got together like in someone's basement.
Yeah.
Whereas we would be doing it. We're not going to be flying anybody into my bedroom and to sit next to me while we're doing the show. So it would probably be all during Skype. So that's one of the difficult things too, is knowing who's going to want to be talking at certain moments and not interrupting them like Scott often does. So we're going to have to.
When have I ever interrupted?
Oh man! So it'll take some logistics, but I think that would be a cool show. I can just imagine getting, you know, Rant and you know, maybe Gundam and you know, Irwin and who knows else on the show, and just see, you know, maybe get Faso and Gambit or somebody on the show too. That would be a fun little panel. We'd have to have some specific topics to discuss, but that would be a lot of fun. I think it's a good idea, Christy.
Yeah, I could be John McLaughlin. Issue one. Pot odds. Ridiculous or not?
Oh, that would be awesome. We'd actually get someone like that on there to do it for us, though. We all sit around and someone else does it. That'd be hilarious. All right, well, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we give. This one comes from Bob Levy. He was just on our cruise.
Hi, Scott and Chris. Bob Levy calling. We love the cruise. Your staff was fantastic. They made us feel safe and secure, and I will definitely go on another cruise again. I have one suggestion. Maybe the next cruise, or the next few, you could use playing cards with bigger numbers, because some of us mature players had a problem reading the cards, and I don't think you want an age suit against you for that. But again, it was a great cruise, and I really enjoyed being with you guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think we talked about Bob last week, right? And just how much fun you had talking bowling with him, right?
Yeah.
And not only did they email us when they got off, they called the hotline. So we're going to see him on a future cruise. I know that's going to happen. And, you know, here's the thing. We do get this request often for the big index cards. And here's kind of what I tell folks is, you know, next time we order cards from Jason, our great friend at J Design, we definitely will go for those big index cards. But the reason we didn't get them initially was, quite honestly, we're just smitten with J Design cards, aren't we?
Oh, sure. And that's the other thing, too, is I think that if J Design is going to supply them again, too, he does offer the larger, I think, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. But that's the problem is when you get into larger index, then you're not able to do that artistic.
Oh, yeah.
Design of the card that really, I mean, since I like the cards too, I mean, they're incredibly durable. I mean, we're still using the same deck in our home game that we've used for years. So they're very good quality cards, but what I really like about them is the, you know, the design and look and the style of them. And unfortunately, when you do the big index, you kind of lose that a little bit, but you know, it's form over function, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, a lot of our clientele comes from Florida, and a lot of the people in Florida who play are older and don't have the best sight. And so for me, when I play, I can see well, so sometimes I don't relate to it. But it is the second straight cruise where I had an older gentleman ask me, hey, you know what, I can't see the cards, and then I got frustrated and I lost a pot or something. So, you know, if we can get the bigger index when we order them, we will, because it's important not to lose people over just something that looks pretty. So I like the bigger index sometimes. I mean, I don't necessarily like the ones that I used to have where you could see them from the space shuttle. But I do think that our indexes are bigger than a lot of the casinos I play in, though, so that kind of baffles
me.
But I can see what people are saying when they want to have bigger indexes, so we'll see what we can do.
All right, Bob, we enjoy the fact that you called in, and remind everybody else to call our hotline and get an 813-448-1120, and you're going to win something wonderful, like we're going to give Bob a deck of J-Design playing cards.
Hey!
Official playing cards of Annie Up. Everybody can pick up your own decks at the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com, and Bob, don't worry, we're going to ask Jason to send you the biggest index cards he has. Maybe he has some of those magician cards, you know, or the card shark cards.
Card shark cards.
Wouldn't that be great trying to play the home game?
Oh, man, that would be so cool.
Everybody has their own little tent. You know, you can't really see it around anyone. And then you got some, ass nickel dealer going, hey, cards got to stay on the table.
Not only that, but the ass nickel dealer would have to be a bodybuilder to throw those cards around. It's not exactly easy to shuffle either. It's like a three-person job.
Too.
Well, I know our mailbag is getting backed up. We got a lot of mailbags to get to, and so if you haven't heard your mailbag on the show yet, doesn't necessarily mean we're not going to read it. We've had this one for a couple of months here, and we're finally getting it on the show. Ed Locke, hope you're still listening. Hope you don't hate us. This one says that he likes to write down every hand in a tournament, so. He tried it during a recent tournament, which now probably isn't recent, but so he was writing down every hand. If it was 9-4 off, I would write that down and put fold and move on. If it was a bigger hand, I would write more. This had surprising effects. I was able to pay attention to every hand. Being required to wait until it was my turn, then writing it down, took enough time that I was never bored. Second, it really helped me fold questionable hands. If you were thinking about calling with Queen 10 off, Scott Long, with other players to act, then you think, wait, I have to write this down. If I play it, that might look bad. It's like looking in the mirror, you know, when you're playing poker. Amazing what you will fold if you know it will be in writing. The most surprising thing was this. The players at the table became obsessed in some way with what you were doing. After 100 hands, I said, well, boys, this is hand 100. From that point, people would ask, what hand is this? And know that I would know what the actual number of hand was. Another player wanted me to know what he had if we played a hand together, saying, make sure you write that down. This same player gave me the tournament chip lead on day one with a huge hand. After the hand, he said, I'm sure you will write that one down. In another tourney, the lady next to me wanted to write her hands down too, so I would write some fake hand, and she would write her huge laydown next to mine. Anyway, just something to think about.
We had a little discussion on the forum about this too. Folks that do it and how they do it. I would suggest folks go to annieupmagazine.com/forum and find that thread, because there's some different good ideas. I mean, some people actually use old-fashioned back before the world had color pencil and paper and do this, and then, you know, the new cool kids are using their iPhones or what other kind of electronic devices and putting it in. And there's a good discussion about, how do you do this, and still focus on the tournament. Do you end up getting too focused on this and not the tournament? Or you're too focused on the tournament and you let a couple hands go and then you're ruining everything? So, yeah, there's a lot of things involved in it, but I really liked Ed's letter in talking about some of the stuff that he didn't think would happen that did happen. And, he's right. You know, if you... I think about this probably on Poker on TV. You know, if you got the whole card cameras there, you know, I got to think there's some players that go like, you know what? Everybody's going to know I played 9-4 offsuit. Maybe I just don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing for a lot of players. So
it's funny because when you had online poker and we played, you had hand histories and it would do it for you automatically.
Yeah.
And I never really gave any thought to, oh, I'm going to be looking at my hand history later. But if that's something that you're doing, if you're a student of the game, that's something you will be doing. It's like your homework, and you're going to look at it and you're going to say to yourself, how did I even think that I should play that hand there? Why did I do that? And eventually you reprimand yourself enough or whatever that you'll stop doing it. So it's a little laborious to do it by hand like that at a table. And the other thing too is you got to write it so nobody can see what you're writing, because the person next to you will see, oh, I wrote down 9-4. It means I folded, whatever. So they're going to know what hand you played. So you got to really keep it indiscreet, and it does seem like a hassle, but it definitely, if you do it deliberately, It definitely gets you in some sort of, you know, ritual, you know, so that you're always doing everything exactly the same, so no one can put a read on you either, because you're sitting there writing your hands down and then playing your hands. So that could help as well.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right. It could be a little tedious, and if you're like me, you've got absolutely craptastic handwriting, so probably just a waste of time anyhow. So, you know, maybe what I would suggest is you go to your local baseball stadium, right?
Yeah.
And you find, you know, a couple of those seats about four rows from the dugouts where there are 27 crusty old guys there, and they all have the little scoreboard or the score, and they're keeping score of the baseball game.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though no one knows any idea what that is, but what I would do is I would hire one of them to sit behind you, and because you know they're going to be able to take good notes.
I have to admit, usually I kind of know where you're going with things, and that one there, you had me right up until the end. I had no idea what the hell you were about to say there, so kudos to you for keeping me on the edge of my seat there, buddy.
Oh, thank you. But seriously, you know, here's one of the things, too, is back the hand history thing that you mentioned before is huge because, you know, when we all had online poker stars, I miss you so much. we had the hand histories, and when you did, you know, when you worked with a pro or some kind of instructor, that was a great tool for them.
Yep.
You know, you copy the hand histories, you send it to them, and they can analyze it and really show you where you made big, huge mistakes. Now, obviously, you can't really replicate that with here because, I mean, a lot of the information in the hand history was, you know, complete. You know, you had chip stacks for everyone and things like that, and you can't go to that kind of detail here. But being able to at least replicate the hands you played and why you didn't, it's a step in that direction towards, you know, if you ever want to, you know, hire somebody like Lee Childs or somebody like that. I mean, having that kind of resource is going to be huge for that instructor and helping you become a better player.
Sure, and again, that's that those hand histories were remarkable because they told you updated chip counts, every blind level, where you were in position and everything, whereas the way Ed was doing it, you know, I'm sure he was just writing down the two cards and whether he played them or folded them and what he did with them, and that's definitely a stepping stone, but I can imagine, you know, he can come up with some sort of spreadsheet, you know, that he could bring with him on a clipboard or something, and then he could even sort of start filling in what seat he was in and what, you know, what position he was in and what the blinds were and stuff too. Once you get it so it's streamlined, you can make it into a science and probably do it fairly quickly and accurately too. So a lot to think about there.
All right, Ed, well, we appreciate you emailing your very wonderful question to us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com. Everybody else, you do the same thing. About 7-8 months from now, we'll get it on the show. And at that point, we'll send you something wonderful, like we're going to send Ed, a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. And be sure you ask about the Anti-Up logo version if you want. And be sure you use the code ANTIUP and get free shipping on your order.
The Call of the Four is going to take a week off, give it a little vacation, but don't forget.
Here's what I don't understand. All right, we were on the ship, right?
Right.
I saw you a couple times. I knew you were there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You saw me once or twice,
uh-huh.
Usually at the bar, but I was there, right?
Yep.
And I know we saw Jody on the ship, right?
Yep.
Here we are a couple days after the cruise ship. We're doing a show. We found the time to do the show, but Jody, you know, too busy. Too busy to get the cauliflower to us.
That's it. He's fired.
Yeah. It's hard to get good help these days.
What are you going to do?
But no, we got a couple good cauliflowers coming up as soon as Jody gets catched up on everything.
I liked earlier, too, you said big, huge.
Big, huge?
Yeah. Big, huge mistake, you said. I was like, oh, okay. Gotta love that.
As soon as Jody gets caught up on everything, I'm sure he'll give us some very good answers. But don't keep that from sending us new ones to give him, so we always have something to keep him busy with. Email your call to Flores to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if we use it on the show, we'll give you something great like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
We did get some feedback this week, though,
on the Charlie's Angels gig, right?
Yeah, from Bernice Q, otherwise known as Amy. She says, counting cards is critical in poker, as I discovered after my home game, realized we were playing with 51 cards. No one knew how long we had been playing with the Queen of Clubs on the floor, which is generally where I always find her. But we all learned an important lesson. I'm sure that Charlie's Angels guy was just making sure that Deck was right. That's the guy with the little calculator on his wrist, right?
Calculator watch, yeah.
It's funny.
No, I did not think about that.
It's funny. A couple of weeks ago, I was hanging with the family, and my nephew loves to play Hold'em, and he loves to play the cards. And they gave me a deck to play with, and I grabbed it, and I said, "This feels light." And they're like, "Really?" I said, "It doesn't feel like all the cards are here." And I counted them out, and it was 51, Scott. I couldn't believe it. It was only one card off, but yet it felt wrong in my hand. And sure enough, we were missing, like, the Ten of Spades or something. I think it was on the ground with the Queen of Clubs. I don't know. But it's very important to double-check your cards. I mean, I don't know how often. I don't think we've ever counted the cards in the home game.
I think every once in a while, I think Gambit might do a little countdown like you see the dealers do. I could be wrong, but I think I've seen him do it once or twice. But we certainly don't do it as much as we probably should.
Yeah, we probably should do it more than we do. But
What we should do is after every hand, play a hand of Chinese poker. That way we know for sure that the deck is counted.
Oh my God, that would make the home game so bad. And it would all be based on the button, too. So the four guys to the left of the button or right of the button would have to play, while the other guys just sit around and hold their butts or whatever. I don't know. But really, you should count your deck down every once in a while. Something we don't do. We should be practicing what we preach here, I guess. But
Think there was some Mr. Funny Man and Bernice Q's game that after this was discovered go, "I knew you weren't playing with a full deck." And then four or five other people that groaned. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? I wouldn't be able to resist it. I'd have to be the guy that did that.
Oh, my God. You're so corny. As my father would say, "You want to see corny? Look at my feet." All right, we've got a little housekeeping here. Don't forget, we're looking for ambassadors in Central California and even Deadwood, if that is possible. Apply to annieupmagazine.com/ambassadors. And even if you aren't in those areas but you'd like to be one, who knows? We got guys flaking out on us all the time. You never know.
That's not true. But you might. You never know.
You never know, though. They might have other things they have to do, and they can't do the position anymore. So no matter where you are, if you want to be an ambassador, why not apply?
And don't forget to like us on Facebook. And like us on Facebook. Don't bother that Twitter thing at all. We've capped out on Twitter followers, so we don't need any more Twitter followers.
Yeah, we're at 2025 now, I think it is. So it's a lot of people. It was cool when we were 2020. That was kind of cool. I was like,
yeah,
wow, we're 2020. And, of course, we talked about the cruise earlier with the hotline. But don't forget, if you need a vacation, why not take an Antioch Poker Cruise? We got 5 great cruises on tap, starting with the one in November, and then 4 more next year. We're leaving from Baltimore in November, then Port Canaveral, Miami, New York City, and Tampa. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. Now, let's hear from our Antiup News Desk.
All right, there wasn't anything for poker players to like as both major U.S. political parties released their platforms at conventions over the past 2 weeks. The Democrats ignored the issue completely, despite mentioning support for, quote, internet freedom in the platform. Republicans were much more vocal, continuing a plank seeking a prohibition of online gambling that has been part of the platform for years, and also seeking a reverse of the recent federal interpretation of the WIRE Act.
You know, I wonder how players who are Republican who want to play online poker feel about something like that. Is it enough to make them not vote for their party's candidate, or, you know, or vice versa? You know, if you're a Democrat and, you know, you don't like, and obviously the Democrats here are talking about internet freedom. They weren't talking about poker, which was sad. But, you know, is that kind of a topic that's enough for you to change your mind about who you're thinking about voting for?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. To be honest, personally, I would hope not.
Yeah.
You know, I would hope that, I mean, the world, we've got a gajillion issues in the world, and as much as you and I are very much into poker legislation because it's not just a hobby, it's a vocation for us.
Right.
You know, I never really like to hear one issue candidates, no matter what that issue, or one issue voters, regardless of what that issue is, because, you know, I think it's a little too simplistic. But what I would be interested in is, you know, poker players letting their parties know that it's not acceptable that this issue is not being addressed or is being addressed negatively, you know, depending on what party you're registered in.
Right.
And seeing if you can change that. I mean, we had a good discussion on Fifth Street Radio last night, and we didn't mention our personal politics. I think both Mark Hoke, the host, and I know each other's, and we talked about the fact that, you know, he was asking, like, you know, hey, the Republican Party is this party of personal liberty, and I said, yeah, you're right, and on this particular issue, it seems to be something that flies in the face of that. Likewise, you know, you've got the Democrats, you know, touting, hey, we need more freedom on the internet, yet not willing to go far enough to say you need the freedom for poker. So,
yeah, right.
You know, I think it's, I don't want to say it's double speak out of both parties, but it's certainly not consistent with the overall platform message that both parties are putting out to either ignore or be against internet gaming, I think.
Now, of the two, if you're a proponent of online poker, clearly the Democrat side is a little more stronger for us in that they're at least touting internet freedom.
Well, yeah, at least.
And that's
not
an umbrella that it could fall under, at least.
Not seeking a ban.
Right, yeah, not seeking a prohibition on it, so. But yeah, no, I think if there was an issue that was so important to you that it could, and I'm not saying poker is the one, but I mean, if any issue was so important to you and your party that you chose to follow was against that one issue that you were so important of, then I think it'd be enough. I certainly have family members who were Republicans who voted Democrat last time for something that they weren't happy with. I don't recall what it was. It was 4 years ago. So I think that it definitely is a possibility. I just wondered if there are some people so serious about online poker that they would, in turn, because, you know, I mean, a lot of people associate Republicans with money. You know, it obviously gets associated with people who have, and a lot of poker players have a lot of money. You know, I mean, look at Doyle Brunson. He's a Republican. And I think he said he was voting for Obama because he was so mad what happened with the UIGEA and all that. So for him, it changed him, a lifelong Republican from Texas, and he changed. So it's interesting to see what people put in their platforms, knowing what damage it could do or not, or what harm it could do, or the other way around, what it could, you know, encourage people to come onto their side. So,
well, right. You know, the other thing I was asked last night too was, you know, what does this mean? And I think it doesn't really mean a lot,
right?
You know, in the final analysis, I mean, you're voting for candidates based on their personal beliefs, not so much the party platform. I don't know too many candidates that run completely on this platform.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's more a symbolic thing.
Okay, well, in better news, South Point Poker LLC has become the first U.S. casino licensed to offer online poker. Pending further tests and approval, South Point is expecting to launch gaming to Nevada residents by next month. Very exciting.
It's happening. Yep. It's happening.
It's happening.
We're getting closer. Obviously, you know, we'll reserve our dropping the balloons to when it actually does happen. And actually, I'll probably drop one balloon because I won't be able to play in Nevada. But,
right.
I'll save the rest of the balloons for when the rest of us in the country get this opportunity. But but certainly it's getting there. And, you know, what's interesting about South Point, too, is, you know, they have their own software and everything. They've been doing their own online free site for probably more than a year now.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they're able to get into this market a little quicker than end up with other folks. So we'll be very interested to see how many people sign up as soon as this going and how it works out. All right, and finally, director Chris Bell is working on a documentary, appropriate, called Ultimate Beat, which will document the cheating scandal that befell online poker sites Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker. No word yet on when the movie is set to debut.
Well, it's a documentary. I wonder if he'll be interviewing, say, Annie Duke and Phil Hellmuth and Joe Seebach, too. I wonder if he'll get them to go in front of the camera about it. I'm sure Annie Duke will talk about it.
Yeah, there's a little I guess trailer, you call it, at WPTMag.com, a little blog post there. That it was interesting. I mean, I kind of, you know, you see all these people talking about, hey, we're working on a movie. You know, I'm like, all right, well, great. Let me know when you're done with it.
Yeah.
So I know it's going to get there. But this one, I kind of wanted to poke around, and the trailer was pretty good, and, you know, it's mostly interview driven. And, you know, he says they're looking for more interview subjects. So, I mean, I imagine it'd be one of these things once you. The artist in him will know once you get to the point where you think you're telling the story enough, that's when you'll finish. But, you know, the stuff they had on there already, I thought were pretty strong interviews.
All right, well, it's a long time coming because it took a break in between for the cruise, but we're going to be able to put the cap on an O'Malley's move today. Let's play part one. ¶¶
welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game. It's nine-handed. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with two jacks, hearts, and clubs. The table's standard raise is to $12. We've got $375 behind, down a bit, but not bad. We go ahead and bet the $12. The plus one and plus two fold. The MP1 calls, leaving him about $390 behind. The MP2 and cutoff fold. The button calls with about $600 behind. And the blinds get out of the way. The button is a pretty good player who might be a bit on the loose side. He loves to chase draws all the way down and slow play his big hands, coming alive on the river. The pot is $34, max rake taken, and the flop comes jack of spades, ten of spades, nine of spades. Gulp. Well, here's an interesting flop. We got top set, but it's an extremely wet board, both with flush and straight flush possibilities. But the odds of our opponents flopping a flush is unlikely. With $34 in the pot, we make it $25 to go. The MP insta calls, but the button thinks for a while before calling, almost like he was pondering a raise. The pot is at $109, and the turn is the meaningless four of diamonds. A welcome sight, unless we're already beat. We decide to lead at this pot again. We bet $75 into the $109 pot. The MP now insta-mucks, but the button raises us all in. If we're beat, we've got to have outs, right? With one card to come, are we ahead? What do we do?
Ugh.
I think that I've introduced that word to you, because you never used to say that. I used to, like, type it to you. I don't even know if I actually pronounce it. I just like to write it a lot, but you like to say ugh now.
It's just a great word to say, isn't
it? It is. It's kind of fun.
Especially when we find ourselves playing out of position like we do here.
Yeah.
This is a proverbial coin flip, in my opinion. The button could be making a move on us, knowing that we raised into the gun, and therefore less likely to have hit the flop. I mean, obviously, we're raising the gun. Usually it's, a big pair or something like that, and doesn't really connect here. And, he makes a big raise on us, and he knows we can probably get us to lay it down. But he's also a loose player, capable of playing a wide range of hands, so it's entirely possible that he's connected here with some kind of crap like 7-8 or king-queen, and... So I'm not scared of the straight flush possibility here, but I'm looking for a tiebreaker, and I think that's it here. So I don't think it's worth risking my stack to find out whether he's bluffing.
Yeah, I got to disagree with you here. with one card to come.
First time ever.
Really, to me, if this guy's got a made hand, especially a huge hand, why shove? There's no reason to shove. That whole, he overbet, it's one of those classic, he'll call me because he thinks I'm overbetting, and I actually haven't. No, I don't think that's happening here. To me, with a made hand, you're going to want to get as much as you can on it and just milk us for some more money. So if it were two cards to come, it would be a flip if you were drawing, but I think he's bluffing with outs. It feels like a semi-bluff here. So I am absolutely calling with my set. The only hand that I'm dead to is a straight flush. He does not have a straight flush. I have 10 outs, if I'm wrong, to a regular flush, or a straight. So I'm definitely calling here. I can't let it go. All right, let's see what happens.
Hello again. After a long, painful thought process, we come to a decision. Our opponent is not shoving here with a made hand. It's got to be some kind of draw, maybe with a pair. Ace of spades, ten of hearts? Something like that. We could be wrong, but we don't think we are. And even if we are, we've got to have outs. We make the call, and our opponent turns over the ace of spades, eight of clubs. He's got the straight and flush draw, but after the ace of hearts comes on the river, we take in the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying it's crucial to know your opponent's tendencies before you find yourself being put to a tough decision against them. I'll see you on the
All right, yeah, I gotta admit, this is, I biffed on this one. I did the show notes because you know how we do it. We always put down our thoughts right after we hear the first part without hearing the second part, so it's genuine, right?
Yeah.
And so when I was reading it over before, I listened to the clip here, and I'm like, Scott, you're a freaking idiot.
I wouldn't say that.
Chris is right, and then, of course, you know, we play the clip, and O'Malley confirms what you said, and you're right. You know, I mean, I do think there's some value every once in a while with shoving with the main hand to kind of throw off the scent every once in a while. But yeah, it doesn't seem like this was the time to do it. So, you know, I need to pay a little more attention to those situations and not be such a wimp.
It's funny because, you know, I don't really get that impression that you're wimpy when we play, though. Maybe it's when you have too much time to think about it.
That's like it. Maybe I'm.
You know what I mean? I realize you. I've sat behind you and railed you when you folded ace queen and like on the button when it folded to you, and I'm like, what is he doing? But really, though, I don't really get the impression that you're wimpy when you play. So I really do think it is that you read a lot into this stuff, and maybe you're trying to figure it out because it's a 1 minute mystery or whatever we want to call these O'Malley's moves and stuff. So you know, even back then when we had Columbo doing it, so maybe that's it. Maybe that's why. Because I felt that same way. I thought, man, why is he thinking this way? And to me, yeah, it felt so much like a draw, and we were right. So that's always a good feeling too, to know that this guy just had the ace of spades in his hand, and even if the flush did get there, you know, on the turn, then we still had some outs to beat him. So
yeah, I mean, I guess part of the problem, it's different with straights here. It's the part of the problem with the flushes is that these loose players can play all kinds of different cards.
Yeah.
So you know, you could see. I guess where I was thinking, the more I look back at it, I was thinking, you know, you might shove with a smaller flush here in case the opponent had, you know, the ace of spades or something like that that could catch up with one more card. Mm-hmm. That would be an example where you would shove with a made hand but not a great hand. And we are behind that.
Yep.
Obviously,
yep.
We'd have to catch up. So that's probably where I was thinking. But, you know, it's tough. I think it's always tough to fold top set regardless of what's on the board.
Yeah, no, I did think about that too. I did think about the baby flush trying to protect its hand against a four card flush, and I think I have actually done that too. Where, you know, but in this situation, though, the guy wasn't like in a blind. That's when I usually get into that kind of situation when I'm in the blind with a couple of suited cards, and I make my flush, and I'm trying to protect against the guys who are raising preflop, and I know they have, you know, whatever. So, but yeah, that's a good point too. That is a good point. I'm just glad that we won. I always like to see O'Malley win money. That way. He sticks around and does some more of these for us.
Absolutely. Right, Chris, I imagine a lot of our listeners have probably wondered what it's like to go reporting on major poker tournaments like you and I do, although we don't certainly do it to the level that Poker News does.
Right.
But today's guest knows exactly what's involved in that very complicated process. Sarah Grant is not only one of the on-air faces of PokerNews.com's terrific live reporting team, she's also responsible for the complex logistics involved in getting the Poker News team to tournaments all around the world. And before joining Poker News, she worked on a number of feature films, and when she's not reporting on poker, she's playing it, which we love. Thanks for joining us today, Sarah. I know it's really early out there in Las Vegas.
No problem. Good morning, you guys.
All right, we'll get us started. Tell us how you got involved with Poker News.
It was kind of bizarre, actually. I was involved in, you know, film, as you mentioned before. I was an AD, which is essentially a film set manager, and schedules the film. Basically, just bring the film in on budget and on time. And I worked on a fighting movie as kind of a favor to a friend of mine, where I met Heath Herring, the Texas Crazy Horse, who it was kind of, we dated for about 6 or 7 months with him being in Vegas and me being in LA. And after a while, it was kind of a long, weird story. But anyways, after a while, I kind of decided it was probably time that we moved in together. So I came out to Vegas since his job was a little bit more, you know, unique than mine, and just started looking for work in production out here. And unfortunately, they don't make a lot of movies in Las Vegas. So I was not working for, gosh, almost 2 months. And finally, I just decided, okay, well, I guess you got to figure something else out. So I hit up Craigslist. Swear.
Oh, my God.
I know. And Poker News was looking for essentially a production assistant for the World Series of Poker. But when Matt saw my resume, he said, you know what, I think we could maybe make something a little more long-term work and maybe something with a little bit more responsibility. So I started out scheduling for the World Series, and then after about 3 or 4 months, they asked me to be in front of the camera, and I was like, yes, let's do it. So they're both really awesome, you know, jobs, but after having worked in film for so long, I always, you know, thought, man, being the talent is really a good deal. So and then it's just evolved from there. I think I've worked there for almost 3 years now.
So,
and yeah, I never expected it.
You knew nothing of poker, though? You just were you knew the production stuff, and that's how you got on board first?
Yes, I knew nothing. And in fact, I had just read a book, the Doyle Brunson book, The Super System,
right?
Because my boyfriend, he used to date Lacey Jones, so he kind of got into poker from her, and they had just broken up right before we got together, so he was like all fired up about poker, and he would, you know, go and come home at like 5 in the morning, and I just had no idea what was going on about poker, and he'd, you know, want to talk to me about hands, and it was almost like after a certain point I was like, okay, I have to figure out what's going on with poker, else I'm not going to be able to have a conversation with him anymore. So I just read the book, and just, you know, I had played my first, you know, couple games when we moved to Vegas, but no, I was by no means, you know, I had no idea really compared to now what. Not that I know that much about poker, but the whole world, the whole scene, like this whole, you know, niche that I didn't even really realize existed at that time.
Wow. Well, you know, if you go to pokernews.com, what can our listeners expect, you know, to find from your team during when one of these major events that you guys always seem to take over?
Well, I mean, really, everything you're into. It's interesting because I just got back from Oklahoma. We did the Windstar event, which we had never done, and you know, in terms of video, they told me like they were really impressed because, you know, we'll go to the location and give you a basically a tour of the location, you know, where you should spend your money, where you should, you know, go events, you know, things you should go see, the events that are going on in the area. And you know, on the written side, before you get there, we have the Poker News Jet Set, which will tell you, you know, great places to eat, all the different things that you could see close by and far away. In terms of just traveling, you know, we show you all the travel stuff to do. But, you know, obviously for poker aficionados, what's more important is the poker stuff. And, you know, depending on how big the event is, we'll send sometimes a team of 10 guys, sometimes a team as small as 1 or 2. And they're on the floor getting hands, talking to players after hands, you know, writing down some of the funny things that happen between players, and, you know, talk to the tournament staff, just trying to really get everybody's side of the story of what's happening, you know, at any given poker tournament. Whatever you want. And I think podcasts, you know, they do a podcast from, you know, one from Vegas, and then they also do whoever's on location, usually do one. Does one which Christy runs, and you know, so they'll try to pull whoever, say, is the chip leader, or if there are any stories happening, whatever kind of media you're into to find out about poker. Poker News really has it, except for you know, we don't really focus very much on the social connecting, I guess, like 2+2, where people can just come in and say whatever they want.
Right.
We don't really have a lot of that, which, you know, I really like, because everybody. I don't really want to know everybody's opinion about everything.
Right.
It's sometimes not so good for your ego. But yeah, in terms of everything else, pretty much you can get it on Poker News. And actually, I met someone from Ante Up in Oklahoma just briefly one morning. And so I've been checking out your guys' stuff too.
Awesome.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right, well, you're deeply involved in getting the teams from event to event, and you guys do several events every year. Walk us through kind of how you set up an event from getting there to getting home, or I guess from one event to the next if you don't have time to go home in between.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you can't believe. For example, just yesterday, so I got home on Tuesday night. I slept probably 12 hours yesterday, and then I turned, you know, on my email yesterday when I wake up, and it's, oh, hey, by the way, we're sending a bunch of teams to World Poker Tour Paris and Malta, and, you know, they need to leave, like, on Friday or Saturday.
Wow.
This isn't usually how it works. Usually, you know, we have deals, I think, for the evenings, and the LAPTs and stuff, where we know pretty far in advance what we're doing, which makes it significantly easier. But I think these things kind of came last minute, and which makes it a lot harder. But, you know, basically what I try to start with is, you know, everybody on the team has individual needs. Everybody's traveling and doing crazy stuff all the time, whether it, you know, is to go see their boyfriend or to go visit their family or whatever's going on. So I just try to reach out to everybody on our team to make sure I know exactly where they are headed and where they're headed back to after the event. And, you know, then try to work. Basically, it's a super lot of research in the beginning so that I can keep track of, okay, it'd be, you know, best to have everybody arriving around 1 p.m. because I can get everyone's flights to arrive somewhere around then. And, you know, the more people we can have going together, the cheaper, the more efficient it is. Trying to find hotels that, you know, can save us money. It really depends. It's so crazy because some cities are, I mean, I remember EPT London this last year was just super expensive. But then you find other events like Prague and, you know, some smaller cities where you can get awesome hotels for way cheaper. So I try to find a place where, you know, say it's snowing, far away for them. But logistically, it's just a lot of research primarily. And then, you know, Europe's pretty good about having private car drivers. And same thing in Latin America. The tours we do in the U.S., it usually works out easiest to have someone from the team rent a car and drive everyone together. But the cars are so small in Europe that one bag in the car and that's about all that can fit. So we end up having to, you know, hire kind of professional drivers with these big Mercedes type things. And that's what we'll be doing for in between the WSOPE and San Remo. But WPT Paris and Malta, we'll just try to fly the whole team over together on some flight. And, you know, the crazy thing about traveling in Europe sometimes is, you know, our camera guys have extra bags. And Christy just called me panicking yesterday because, of course, she's going to Paris and Malta. So she's going to have two bags. She needs to bring all her, you know, fashion accessories and shoes and these. And, you know, Europe's not very a lot of the budget airlines in terms of having excess baggage. So I spend a lot of time calling the airlines to find out exactly what the additional fees are. You know, sometimes it makes more sense to just fly on an expensive airline when they're going to end up charging you 300 euros per leg of your flight for your And that's something, a lot of those things, you know, I've really had to learn along the way. I've definitely made some mistakes with our travel in the beginning. You know, there's just so many little things and little companies and little, you know, like Expedia, for example, will usually, it'll be 24 hours to cancel a flight. But almost every other, you know, of these sort of websites that help you out, once you book the flight, like, that's it. And I can't tell you, like, two or three times, you know, where I'm doing a million things, I accidentally put in Chris instead of Christopher, or there's just so many little stupid things involved in travel that I've had to really learn to go back and always recheck, make sure everything's exactly right. But really, it's super fun. It's really rewarding when you get the whole team booked and everyone's happy and they get to their hotel and they like it and I save the company some money. And it's a lot of work for a couple of days, but, you know, once you get everything set up, then you can kind of just kick back and watch the cover roll in.
So you're pretty much ideal for this position, though, given what you did with the movies and stuff. I'm sure that there are plenty of executive producers who are breathing down your neck saying, you know, we need to get the cheaper donuts or whatever, right?
So it's just interesting because, you know, I tell Heath, it's, you have this one vision for your life and this one kind of idea. You know, I was on the way to being in the Directors Guild. I was going to be the youngest woman in the Directors Guild, and I was all of that, and that's all I cared about doing. And, you know, then it's just so interesting. The universe maybe has a totally different path for you, and it turned out this one was even better than what I had imagined for myself. You know, this wasn't, I never even knew this job existed. And now that I have it, I absolutely think, yeah, it's both suited for me and me for it.
Can you give us some insight as to what goes into a successful live reporting team?
Yeah, absolutely. It's super interesting because I was actually just talking about this in Oklahoma. We were kind of an interesting motley crew, in my opinion. Mickey, who's this adorable little Jewish boy from, you know, Florida. And then we had this kid from Cleveland who's really young. He just got, you know, out of college. And, you know, I had done film before. My camera guy had done film before. But he's a Mormon. And, like, just weird to me, we were such a motley crew. End of the trip, you know, we were all talking about what a sort of family we'd become just in this short amount of time. And, you know, I think actually the truth is that's part of what makes a good team is having a lot of people with really different scenarios and different backgrounds. And I think poker is one of those things where you really do end up with a lot of people who have a lot of different skills and have done a lot of different things in their lives before. And so everybody kind of has something to add to it. And I think for the most part, the only times we've ever had problems, you know, or conflicts, character conflicts within our organization, it's usually people who are too similar. You know, they're too interested in the same things. They're, you know, kind of going after the same stuff. And to be honest, I think the biggest problem anyone ever has in almost any company or any film set or anything I've ever worked with is, you know, if people get too gossipy. Like, it's just really important, I think, to recognize that, you know, when we're traveling, we're all tired, we're all, you know, crabby, we all stay up really long hours and, you know, still have to get up every day, and we do a lot of other things. You know, we're writing articles while we're on there and have a lot of things on our plate, and, you know, recognizing that everything everybody says in every moment maybe isn't something that everybody else needs to know all the time. Next, and I definitely think that, you know, trying to make sure that we be patient with each other helps a lot.
Well, Chris and I are on site for several major tournaments every year, and we know just how chaotic that scene can be. What are some of the biggest challenges involved in pulling off your productions?
You know, in terms of challenges, I think for me, a lot of it has to do with just things that are beyond our control sometimes. You know, a lot of times things happen where, you know, we had a bunch of problems with Uruguay where, you know, it was just people got their bags lost and the airplanes didn't get there when they were supposed to. We had people who were stuck for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, if you're just not bringing the coverage and the people paid to bring the coverage, you know, obviously it's not our fault. And then also, you know, we've had just one or two situations where, you know, people have personal things happen in their own life, and it's just such a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants, moment-by-moment thing. But it's also, most events are so short, you know, minus the World Series, most events are so short that, let's say something happens on the day someone's supposed to leave, really by the time we could get someone else booked and set up and, you know, travel 2 days to the location, it's, you're halfway through the tournament already. And, you know, so one of the biggest problems is just if anything ever happens last minute, there's really no backup. You know, there's no plan B where, you know, like on a film set, for example, we usually have set up, okay, if something crazy happens on this day, we have something else scheduled. We could be shooting this. There's always some way to be utilizing your team to be making money. But, you know, with this stuff, it's just like, well, if the person doesn't get there, then really that we just aren't going to be able to bring the coverage.
Well, speaking of the coverage then, what do you think the future of live poker tournament reporting is going to be?
Well, I think it's getting bigger and more, which I hope. I mean, obviously we've all had this last year or two has been a little bit scary. And, you know, I think even for Poker News, we've taken a lot of things, you know, started, you know, being a lot more careful about how we're spending money and saving money. But at the same time, this last year, I think, you know, for we really haven't done a lot of WPTs, and we're starting to do that. We'd never done this WinStar thing in Oklahoma, and I do think actually a lot of, you know, poker rooms and poker events are starting to see the necessity and the benefit of this live coverage. It's almost like, you know, if your tournament doesn't have kind of live coverage, it almost doesn't exist. People can't go back and, you know, check out a winner interview or check out winner photos, and you know, so. And actually, you know, because we're all shaving back a little bit too, I think we're able to do it efficiently and cheaply and just make it, you know, more reasonable for everyone. And as a result, I I think that we're just going to continue to expand as a world, and kind of as a world that we'll expect. If you have an event, that there will be somewhere that we'll be able to follow along and get the coverage.
Well, I know you said at the top of the show that you really knew nothing about poker before you got in this business, but now you play and you travel the world. So I'm really interested in what some of the casinos that you look forward to playing in when you're not working.
Well, I'm kind of a freak because I live downtown. I live on Fremont and Las Vegas Boulevard.
Hmm.
From the get, kind of casinos. And honestly, that's my favorite. Like, I really like to play with old men. I like to play, you know, tournaments where I enjoy doing the flip side too. I think everybody, you know, I had a great time at the ladies event this year, and it's always a big to-do, but for me it's like I really enjoy everything's always so formal, you know, when I'm traveling to these events, that I love to come home, you know, and get dirty and drink a bunch of Chardonnay and talk to people and have it, you know, not be super dramatic and not have you know, sometimes I think guys take themselves a little bit too seriously. I play at the Aria a lot too. You know, Christy lives over there, so I play over there a lot. And just, I find sometimes the vibe where people are just way too serious about poker. And for me, it's like, I figure out my fun time, you know? And I want to have fun and I want to enjoy it. And I love some of the most ridiculous tournaments that I think have some value. Like, even the Golden Nugget every Sunday has a tournament at 9 o'clock in the morning, which is horrible. I have to set my alarm. It's a 5K guarantee and it's $100, and they very rarely even meet the guarantee. So it's just a fun little thing to do and you're done early. Or, you know, on the Stratosphere, every night at 7 o'clock, they have a tournament that's literally, I think it's $40 with like a $20 add-on. It's stupid, but they get always, they have over 100 people there. And it's just, you know, I really like to go spend 6 or 7 hours, drink, enjoy myself, and, you know, come home and not have to make it a humongous mess.
Well, you know, you also write a blog for Poker News. What are some of the topics you like to cover?
Well, that's funny because I actually got told not that long ago that I needed to tone it down. Like, they asked all... They asked all of us girls to write a blog, and this was interesting for me because, you know, I had never even considered writing a blog, and obviously, you know, Christy loves to talk about poker, so her blog's going to be poker, and Lynn wants to be a travel, you know, guru, so she loves to talk about the travel, and for me, I really was trying to figure out what, you know, my niche would be, and I really thought, okay, my niche is just going to be me, you know, I'm just going to talk really honestly and upfront about the things I think about and the things I've been through and things, you know, that I do now. And specifically, I think I was talking about, I'm really crazy about dogs. I like volunteer at the dog shelter down here, and I just am crazy about dogs. And I wrote this one article about how people are terrible to dogs. And my boss was like, listen, like, I don't need to know about every, like, into. So I've kind of tried to tone it back, but, you know, the truth is, for me, I have to talk about, you know, what's going on in my life and what I'm thinking, and what I've found I end up writing a lot about is, you know, spending time with my family when I travel, and I end up writing a lot of heartfelt, kind of mushy things about, you know, traveling and missing each other and growing up, and because finding myself in this poker life is kind of something that I didn't expect, I end up having to kind of reflect a lot on how your life is going this direction, and you really have no idea where it's going, but you're always looking back and grateful for all the things that you had and for your family and friends.
All right, well, you mentioned, obviously, you're dating MMA star Heath Herring, who loves to play poker. As different as poker and MMA seem to be, there seems to be quite a bit of crossover in it. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's funny. Someone was just mentioning to me that they thought that pretty much every guy who's into MMA is really into poker, but maybe not every guy that's into poker is into MMA. But, you know, I read this thing not too long ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, which Heath and I were talking about, which said that every guy thinks that they're good at sex.
I knew that was coming for some reason. I don't know why.
Sex, fighting, driving, and poker. So I just really played to all these, you know, manny man things. And I even was noticing, you know, now that I follow all these people on Twitter, it seems to be there are just certain things that almost every guy, like fantasy draft, okay, everyone's into. Talk about fighting. There are just certain things that I feel like, you know, male dominated industries end up with really male dominated, you know, fan bases. As a result, I think there's a ton of crossover between fighting and poker.
Well, before joining Poker News, you worked on things like commercials and short films and even features that include Hancock, and he's just not that into you. Do you have any great stories from any of these sets that you were on?
Well, people are always asking, you know, both in the poker world and on film, you know, who are the best people to work with, who are the worst people to work with. And I think, you know, one of the things that was the most surprising to me, both in poker and in film, is that sometimes the people that you think are going to be the biggest, you know, hotheads, or, you know, people who are going to be the most conceited, end up being the absolute salt of the earth. And you know, conversely, some people that you're like, dude, you're not really a big deal, they really want you to think they're a big deal. I think Don, he's just not that into you. Ben Affleck was just amazing. He showed up to set day, like 30 minutes early. He was always talking with the crew. And, you know, most of the stars, Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Aniston, they all have drivers and they have people bring them, you know, fancy meals, even though the meals on set are amazing and you can really get whatever you want. But I get it. They're on diets and they need their whatever. But man, he drove his own car there every day and really just a really great work ethic and a really awesome attitude, which, you know, it was just really pleasant to go to work every day with him. And actually Will Smith was awesome too. He was super busy I worked mostly on the second unit stuff, which was all it was awesome stuff. It was like the blowing stuff up, you know, shutting down streets of LA. So we were all super busy during, but he was great and had just a really positive attitude and was really great to work with everyone. And yeah, I think in terms of, you know, memories from the film sets, those are the things that I remember the most, is both the people that were so positive and then, oh my gosh, there have been some people that are just terrible. And to be honest, like, I don't want to say it, but Scarlett Johansson was not a pleasure to work with. So, I just couldn't wait to work with her, but she was definitely not a treasure.
Wow.
You're breaking my heart now. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah, and getting up early and chatting with us. We'll let you go now, but let us know before you leave where you and the team are headed next.
Well, Christy and who else is going? Rich Ryan. They will be at WPT Paris on Saturday evening. So I got to get that going today for sure.
Wow. All right, Sarah. Thanks. We appreciate you joining us, and good luck on the road.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, our hand of the week this week comes all the way from Oregon.
Awesome.
You been to Oregon?
No, but when I was a kid, I called it Oregon.
Oregon?
Yeah, and a lot of people from the Northeast call it Oregon.
That's probably why you call it Con.
I know. I don't even know if that's right, by the way. It's probably can. It's probably both. I don't know.
Well, it could be Oregon, too. I don't know.
But I did. When I moved here, everyone called it Oregon. So I called it Oregon because I didn't want to sound like a total idiot. But yeah, Northeast, a lot of people call it Oregon.
Have you taken any of those accent quizzes online?
No.
It's actually pretty fascinating because we have a friend that is from Western Pennsylvania, Harrisburg area. I call it Harrisburg. She called it Harrisburg. You know, that's how you say it in Pennsylvania, this weird R sounds, right?
Yeah.
And so we got in this huge discussion about linguistics and everything, and she mentioned that there are these quizzes that you can take online that will give you some questions, you answer them, and then it'll tell you, you know, essentially where your accent or your dialect is coming from in the U.S. It's pretty cool. It ended up being... mine ended up being Western.
Huh.
Which they said is the, you know, the lowest common denominator of whatever. And
shocking.
I'm totally fine with, because I'm generally the lowest common denominator of American in any category whatsoever. Yep. But no, I mean, look it up one time, and it takes like 5 minutes, and it's hilarious. I mean, it'll ask you, you know, I mentioned the creak and crick. It'll ask you something like that.
Yeah.
You know, how do you pronounce this word? And it's kind of fun to do. And like I said, it takes 5 minutes. And but it never asked me about Oregon or Oregon.
Well, that's true, though. I was just talking about this with my parents, and it's funny. There are there's a series of words that you could literally ask every person in America, and by the time they answer that list, you're going to know, narrow it down to where they're from. And then somebody was saying how, you know, Connecticut in our area has the least amount of accent, and I was like, you know, you believe that because that's where you're from, that's where you always hear everybody, but no way. I mean, people hear you talk and they're not from that area, they know right away you're from the New York or whatever area. And there are certain words, I think, like quarter is one of them. You say the way you say quarter, some people don't say it the way, and you know, and it's just boom, they know you're all right, you're from the tri-state area, boom, they know right away.
Or if you see somebody batoning up their shirt, you know.
Exactly.
Totally Connecticut at that point. But no, check it out. It's fun. I mean, I'd be interested to see what it says for you. But anyhow, that has nothing to do with their hand of the week, other than the fact that it comes from the great city of Portland, Oregon. Dave O'Dell wrote in, he's playing at the Encore Club. Encore Club folks up there love us. And,
yes.
I can't wait to get up there and see him. Laura and I have been to Portland once, but really just for the night. So, but I'm hoping to get up there at some point and hang out with the good folks at the Encore Club and probably see Dave there.
Yeah.
He said he was playing in their Thursday night 1800 guarantee tournament, $65 buy-ins, 27 players remaining, about $3,900 in the prize pool. And that's when this hand came up. Blinds are 600, 1200, not taking Andes yet.
Okay.
And our hero has 18,900 in units, not even squiggly. He's got it down to the exact unit, Chris. He's probably writing down every hand.
Yeah, he must have his hand history with him.
Exactly, absolutely. And the villain has him covered by a few thousand.
Okay.
All right, we're in the hijack, and we look down at King of Diamonds, Nine of Diamonds, and we have one limper in middle position already.
Well, generally, I let this hand go, to be honest with you. I mean, we have like 13 big blinds or something, and I like to... I mean, I don't mind limping if a couple of limpers are ahead of me sometimes, but really, this is just a hand that can get you into trouble. I don't really like this hand at all. I normally probably would fold this hand, to be honest. I'm not playing Scott Long wimpy poker here. I really would probably. In the hijack, I still have the cutoff, I still have the button, and I still have the two blinds. And King-9 is just not a strong hand, no matter suited or not. Suited only improves you by 2.5% or so. It's not that big a deal. I think I let it go.
You know, in the ranking of things that I hate in this world, Chris...
Is agreeing with me.
No. But number one is anyone that's ever had anything to do with designing a parking garage. Two, all of the Kardashian sisters.
Every one? Even every the young one ones?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I hate them all.
Okay.
And then King-9. Playing King-9.
Oh, yeah, King-9's a bad hand.
It's just a brutal hand. I mean, it's suited, right? So it's worth about 4,000 points more. But, I mean, what are you going to do with this hand? I mean, you're taking a flyer at this point, hoping to flop a flush. And it's not even going to be the nut flush. I mean, I guess it could be.
If the ace of diamonds or whatever.
Well, yeah, or you can get a straight flush, I guess. But, I mean, the chances of that are remote. So, I mean, almost anything else you hit is going to get you in trouble. And I just don't see it. I mean, you got another hand coming right behind it. Let it go, and don't even think about it. I mean, these face card rag hands, and I'm sorry, nine is a rag.
Yeah.
There's just no upside, or very little upside, I should say, to playing these.
It's the equivalent of playing Dolly Parton, 9-5. I mean, it essentially, yeah, because the king is higher, but it's not the nuts, so... You know, you're not going to make the nut flush generally unless... So it's a three-gapper, so even if you make the straight, you're not making any nut straight with it. Queen-Jack-10 comes, you know, Ace-King is the nuts. So, you know, I mean, you're not making a nut straight with it. And if you make the flush, unless the ace and, like, another middling diamond is in there, like the 10 of diamonds, you're not making the nut flush either. So, really, you know, I don't know. I just feel like it's a dangerous... dangerous situation. And you're inviting other blinds to come in when by limping. Now you got two limpers out there. You got three and a half big bets already out there. You know, you're inviting other people to come along by your limp. So if you're going to play it, at least play it for a raise. But I wouldn't even play it. I would just fold it.
Yeah, to that point, I would much rather play 9-5 here. And that sounds weird, but 9-5 is going to get me in less trouble.
Yeah.
Because what happens when a king comes? When a king comes, you're going to be tempted to continue playing this, and that's going to be the worst thing that's ever going to happen.
Yep.
9-5, at least, you know, 9 comes, it might not even be top pair. You might be able to get away from it. 5 comes, you know, it's never going to be top pair, almost ever. You know, you'll be able to get away from that easy. But the problem, you got this king here, and you see that nice little cowboy in the flop. You're screwed. I'm sorry, you're screwed.
Oh, absolutely right, because think about the people behind you and what hands would they play behind you that include a king. They're not going to play king 8 or worse. They're going to play king 10 or better, and so you're going to be outkicked anyway. No matter what kind of king gets involved in a hand here, it's going to be better than your king 9, and you're going to be acting after them too, unless it's the blinds. So really, this is the kind of hand you should just let it go.
All right, we'll see. Maybe he did. No, sorry.
No, he didn't, know.
Yeah.
He just wanted to see how he reacted to that, and then that was it. Show's over.
He limps, and I gotta agree with you here. I mean, if you are gonna play for a raise, you know, play it as a pure bluff that has some backdoor actual hitting potential. But, you know, go and try to get that dead money, narrow it down to 1, and, you know, and don't play it as king 9. Play it as whatever connects with the board that comes.
Yep.
But limping, I think, is, you might as well just take those chips, put them in an envelope, give them to the postal guy, and not put an address on them.
Well, you're really reaching today with some of these analogies and stuff, man. You're getting me. I don't know what you're thinking, but I want to smoke some of it.
All right, so like we said, we had the middle position limper, we limp. The villain who was in the cutoff, min raises.
Huh.
It folds around to the first limper who calls, and it's back to us.
Jeez. All right, call.
Oh, man. You know, you hate to compound one.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, you're in it for one more, you're going to close off the betting. You know, I wasted one ball. I might as well throw a second one in there and hope that, you know, the good Jolly Roger comes down here and singing Ricky Tikki Tavi and just, you know, the Jack Queen and 10 of Diamonds flops, and it's worth it. And I'm going to shoot myself if I didn't put that last bet in. So,
it's like,
yeah, I got a call here. But
it's like you're Tom Hanks in the money pit. You're just throwing more money after bad money. But you're going to have to call now, which sucks. But let's call.
All right. Now, here we get a little information on the villain now. He is an older guy. I wonder if he came over from a baseball game. Where he
I wonder if he's keeping score.
He's an older guy, tight, but probably makes this raise with more than just monsters. All right. Immediately, I've got a gajillion bells going off. I'm annoying people all around me with all the bells. But older, a tight guy, min-raising.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to narrow down people's hands too much pre-flop, but I got them down to maybe 3 hands here.
Yeah.
And none of them are worse than king 9 of diamonds. And lots of them involve a king, and we're certainly screwed.
Yeah, and that's fine to know. I mean, everyone knows that if you knew somebody had aces and they had a huge stack, that doesn't mean you're not going to play against them, because you know you can get their whole stack. So there's no reason not to call here, but you better hit this flop pretty damn hard to continue when this guy bets out again and you check to him. So you better hope that, you know, it's coming king-king 9 or 9-9 king or something, because even that's not even the nuts. You hope it comes 9-9, you know, X. Otherwise,
9-9-9. How about
yeah, 9-9-9, so you know you're not.
We're calling our cards. Let's call for some good ones.
But really, you better hit it pretty hard to continue on against this guy.
All right, our flop comes Jack of Diamonds, 9 of Clubs, 4 of Hearts.
Jeez.
And it's checked to us.
Jeez. Middle pair against a guy who min-raised, who's tight and he's old. Yeah, I think we're checking.
I think, yeah, we're done with this hand unless he decides to check behind.
Yep.
All right, so we do check, and the villain bets 5,000. So let's see. We didn't have a pot there, but it was 2,400 times 3.
2,400 times 3, so that's 7,200. So he bets a little more than half the pot. That's a good bet. That's the right bet to make. No matter what it is.
But yeah, so about
Yeah. So that's about the right bet to make.
And the third opponent in this hand gets out of the way, so we are heads up, and it's on us for 5 G's.
Yeah, see ya. Letting it go. I was not playing this hand to hit the 9, and I certainly wasn't playing it to hit the 9 that's a middle pair on that board. You know, if it came 9 high, maybe I continue. But right now, and even then, it's skeptical. But right now, middle pair with no draw. You know, we have a backdoor straight draw and a backdoor flush draw. Now I'm done with this hand, moving on. Sad that I had to pay that min raise on top of it, but yeah, I'm done with this hand, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the other very important thing here, and we didn't talk about this preflop, is also chip stacks.
Yeah.
We started this hand with 18-9. So at that point, that's like, what, 15 big bets?
Yeah.
Roughly?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really a situation at that point where, you know, you want to be very selective on the pots you enter at that point. And King 9 is not in anybody's selective menu.
Yeah.
So, well, we've already committed to 2,400, so now we're down to what, 16,500?
Yep.
And now 5 grand here, that's almost a third of our remaining stack. At this point, I think if we're putting more money in this pot, we're putting it all in.
Yeah, because we'd have 11,000 left, we'd have less than 10 big blinds if we folded on the turn. And, you know, another bet from him of 5,000, which is a bad bet. He'd probably be more than that. Would be more than half our stack on a turn. Yeah. And you know he's going to bet again if a blank comes off. So, really, you have to think, are your nines good or not? And if they are good, then you're shoving. If they're not good, then why are you calling? So, I'd let it go.
All right. We decide to call.
Don't like that call.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've committed ourselves to this hand. If you're going to commit here, you might as well raise here. Hope that he has something like ace king, and we can actually get him to fold it. If he obviously calls, ace king would get a beat right now or something like that. But you know, if he has aces or kings, we're screwed. But at least give us the option of getting this guy to fold. And he folds too. I mean, we pick up we almost double our stack here. So yeah, I mean, that's significant.
Yeah.
You know, at this point now, by calling here, I mean, we're still going to get it in, but we lose the whatever bet we have now is not enough to get this guy off his hand going forward.
Yeah, I think that we have to assume we're beat here. We really wanted to hit this flop hard, and we didn't. And then he bets enough that makes us pot committed, and do we really want to put our entire tournament life on a pair of nines with a king kicker? I just don't want to do that right now.
All right, well, here's our hero's thought process. He assumed that his opponent would continuation bet here with overpairs, 10-10, ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, possibly pocket eights, two fives, or a set.
Yeah, that sounds right. So now if you're thinking that, then there's only three hands that you beat. You know what I mean? I mean, well, I guess eights through fives you beat, but I really don't think that's what this guy's doing with. So really, if you're thinking that the guy has eights through fives, you know, that's... If you think he has that, then you shove anyway. So you don't think he has that. You think he has one of the other ones, and really it's only three hands that you're beating here, so we need to get out of the way.
Well, you know, I'm also trying to pay attention to my opponent's chip stack here, too. I mean, we know we have him covered by a few thousand, so, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of chips to play with here either,
right,
to be honest.
Right.
And my experience is, particularly if we're talking about somebody that's tight here, is they're not going to keep firing with small pairs on this kind of board when they're that short stacked. I mean, if they're firing, they've got overpair or better here, I think.
Yep.
So, you know, I think we can further narrow down as well.
That's a good point.
All right, so the turn is the four of spades. So our board now is jack of diamonds, nine of clubs, four of hearts, four of spades. And, of course, we're first act again.
Yeah, I was done with this hand already, so there's no way I'm betting. So obviously I'm checking.
Hoping we can get the show down without putting in our dollar in here and our nines. Whatever.
Yeah, if I didn't think it would look totally foolish, I would just throw the cards in the muck without even checking.
But I'll call the postal guy over from the same envelope with the chips.
So I'm checking.
All right, so that's exactly what our hero does, and our opponent fires another 5 grand.
Yeah, that's a smallish bet, but it sounds like the guy now he wants you to call, and he liked that you call. He knew you didn't fold for 5,000 before, so why would you fold for 5,000 now? Is what he's probably thinking. So he's glad that to bet 5,000, and he knows he's giving you great odds on that money. So he's probably asking you to call, and that's just more reason to fold.
Yeah, I think there's two things going on here. One is exactly what you said here. Two, you know, again, it's a $65 tournament. I play these all the time, and I don't know whether you have 5,000 unit chips in this thing, but sometimes that's the case.
Yeah,
you know, people don't actually do proper bet sizing. They just look down like, "Oh, look at this! I got an orange chip here. I just throw one in."
Yeah.
But either case, you know, it's not a good. It's not a good situation here for us. I mean, there's no decision here. It's either fold or get it all in. At this point, we're down to what, 11, so we got less than 10 big blinds. I think we commit ourselves here. So,
yeah, I can't call. I mean, I should have folded before. And
I mean, I think I got to raise all in here and just, you know, punish myself for being an idiot.
If I'm going to play the hand, I'm going to shove, but I don't see myself shoving. I'm done with this hand. But if I was going to play it, I wasn't going to call, that's for sure. I would shove.
Yeah, and we got, what, 27 players left, so we're not even close to any kind of bubble here. I'm trying to figure out how many
probably
entered in the prize pool divided by 65. About 60 people that rig. So, I mean, we got a long way to go to get to the money. So at this point, you know, folding here doesn't make any sense to me now, leaving with 10 big blinds. I got a lot of work to do with a lot of time left in this tournament. I might as well go for broke here, get it in, hope he folds, which is probably not going to happen. And if he calls, hope that by some miracle I'll be either ahead or I can spike something on the river and then, you know, double through this guy and then, you know, take a walk around the room, relax a little bit, come back and pledge not to play King Nine again.
Well, that's surprising to me that you say that, though. I always, when you always talk of, hey, you know what? There's another card coming. I still have 10 big blinds. You know, I'm not going to be on any of the blinds for a few more hands. You know, that's usually the way you would approach this to me. To me, it sounds like you're trying to shed that wimpy image in one show here.
Well, no, but the situation's completely different here. I mean, generally when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about preflop,
you know, right?
Before there's the bloated pot in front of me. I mean, now there's a pretty big pot here in front of me, so that's one thing that's different. And then two, I mean, we're way, way out of the money here. I mean, usually when I'm talking about that is when we get down in this tournament, which I'm guessing probably the top six cash. I'm talking about making those kind of decisions, you know, no earlier until 12 players are left.
Uh-huh.
And before that, I'm trying to chip up and get myself in a good position. I'm not really worried about survival. I worry about survival when we're kind of close to the end, and I see other people making mistakes on survival. But we got 27 players here. We got at least 20 to go before we're even close to money. At this point, I'm trying to chip up, and I made a couple mistakes here, and now I think the best option for us is to get it in and hope we win and double up rather than milk ourselves. I mean, because it's gonna take a long time. You know, what is the Smokey the Bandit music that we keep singing on the way over there?
It took a long way to go, and it's still a long time to get there.
We got a long way to go in this, and, you know, we're going to be exhausted shoving every hand for a while. So,
Let me ask you this. If you knew he had ace-jack, would you still shove?
Right now?
Yeah.
I think I would have to, absolutely.
All right, so you knew he had...
Right now, because I'm assuming I've already taken away any of the hands that we can beat out of his range right now. So I'm assuming we're beat.
All right, so you're assuming we're beat, but you're still shoving, hoping to hit a card that will beat him.
You've got to get lucky now. And again, I would not have gotten into the situation, but every time you get yourself into a situation, I think you got to restart the clock and think about what's the best at that particular point now. You know, we all make mistakes at the table. And sometimes they make multiple mistakes in a hand, and that's the situation here. So what you need to do at that point is not make another mistake. And there's no winning here at this point, I don't think. You know, if we fold here, I think that's a mistake because we're going to be severely short stacked with a long time to go. And if we call, obviously I'm assuming we're calling with the worst of it and just hoping to get lucky. But that's kind of the situation we've got in here, and I think that's the best option of the two crappy options we have right now.
Wow. I can't believe how much I'm disagreeing with you now. I mean, really, here's what I think. You're entitled to your opinion, so I'm not what you say is fine. So, but really, let me look at it to you this way now. You have one card to come. It's one card, right? One card to come. You have 11,000 chips in your hand. And if you know your beat, which you told me you know your beat, you're willing to risk 11,000 chips on... And now it's actually... Yeah, it's if you made that call, it would be 11. So it's 16. If you don't make that call... It's 6,000 you have left, right? If you make the call and then fold. So you have 11,000 before making this call. Mm-hmm. If you have 11,000 chips, that's essentially 10 big blinds.
Yep.
And there's no antes in this tournament because they wouldn't start antes after this. There's just no antes. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that you would rather do one card, hope to hit a 9, which is 2 outs, which may not even be your outs, but or 3 kings. So you'd rather hit 5 outs with one card to come for 11,000 rather than folding and having 4 free looks at a shove preflop and doubling to more than what you had before this hand started. That's what you're telling me right now.
Well, yeah, but you're also assuming that even though that that we're behind here, that there's not a possibility that this other guy will fold.
No, I know, but you
there
already said going in.
That he could fold. I mean, we're talking about an older tight guy here that min raised and has made one good bet and one kind of weak bet at us. The board is paired now. You know, there is a small possibility that he might fold, so I factor that in as well too. But
it's 6,000 more chips to go though for this guy. It's a min raise.
I know. But again, but he's 7-1 on his money as well too. And if he was firing with air, which I seriously doubt, but you know, people do that. You know, I don't think he can continue. I think we're just better off being aggressive here. In a lot of other situations, I totally agree. I mean, I would be fine playing the short stack, but we're just we're only halfway through this tournament.
Oh, I understand, but one hand would double you to more than what you started this hand with, and we had no concern back then when we had 18-9 that we were far from the money. Really, one double up with 11,000, and you're at 22,000, and plus the blinds, and that's one hand later, and you got 5 free looks probably at cards before you have to put in more money of the blinds. So to me, I would rather get 5 free cards for 11,000 than one card and hope to have to hit 5 cards of those remaining 40 or whatever. To me, it just sounds like I would fold and want to shove.
If it makes you feel better, this is not an easy decision to want to make.
Okay, well, that's good.
You know, I certainly would not criticize anybody for doing either way here. But
yeah.
Certainly hope we don't call.
Yeah, I wouldn't call. I mean, if I was going to play it, I would shove too, but I just wouldn't play it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of other stuff goes into this too. It's the, you know, at this point, I just figure I've kind of screwed the pooch on this tournament in general. At this point, and I would probably get out of this thing and go get in a cash game, or maybe there's another tournament starting or something like that. I don't know if that's the case here or not, but or just go home and catch up on TV or something. So, you know, I'm factoring in the time thing, and we're getting way off of the scope of the hand of the week, but those are the kind of things that you think about too. You know, it's a $65 tournament, which is not a lot for me, and, you know, it's kind of a fun thing, and at this point, you know, I know there's a lot of things that are going into that thought right now, but
okay,
some of the things changed then the decision changed, but I could go either way with that. But I'm just right now, my gut is I got a piece of this flop, I kind of screwed up here, let's try to make the best out of this particular hand and hope it works out.
Okay, so I would fold, you would shove. What's he gonna do?
Alright, so he says there's 19,000 in the pot and I'm getting almost 4-1. I call for a little less than half of my remaining stack.
To quote Scott, ugh. Yeah, I can't. Oh my God, I can't call. I can't call. And I sometimes I never understand why people say that they're getting 4-1 on their money. You know, it to me it makes a lot more sense to say that at the end of a hand,
yeah,
or when you're when you're drawing and you still have 2 cards to come, and you're saying, okay, I got the odds to call. But just getting 4-1 on your money, to me, with middle pair against a guy who we assume would do this with big hands, is not justifiable to me. That means that, to me, it just means he's saying, you know, okay, well, that's a real good price, so no matter what I have, it's a good price, so I should call. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I wouldn't deem that as the reason I call.
Well, you're right. I mean, when you get into that, I mean, it's either on the river when you're at the end, you're closing out the betting.
Right.
Like in a limit. I mean, you'd use that kind of rationale all the time on the river. Or when you're drawing. I mean, I guess technically we are drawing here because we don't think our 9 is good. we're drawing pretty thin to a king or a nine, and I wouldn't really count a king if this guy has pocket kings.
Right, or ace king.
Yeah. Well, I bet ace.
Oh, yeah, ace, yeah, ace, yeah, you're right, right.
Well, no, we got
fours, you'd have kings, and you have kings and nines. Yeah. But still, I know what you're saying.
But yeah, so we're not really drawing here either. So I mean, at this point, I'm just trying to put a little pressure on this guy or save some more chips, because by calling here, I think what we're saying is I'm going to be open to folding on the river, and that's going to be the worst mistake we've made in a litany of mistakes here at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're calling here. We got to get the rest in on the river. And what are you going to do at that point? Are you going to hope that you hit and then shove, and then he's going to automatically call, which he might? If not, if you miss, which is more likely, and he bets, are you going to fold? You can't fold at that point. So those chips are worthless now, almost, at this point.
Yeah,
but raised here, probably not going to get the guy off the hand, but you had the opportunity at least to.
That call is unfortunate to me. I no matter what odds you're getting on it, it'd be different if it was on the end and closing out the betting. You know, and like in limit, you get 10 to 1 on your money, you say to yourself, okay, 9 times out of 10, you know, he's not bluffing, but there's that one chance that he would bluff. If I put it on that ratio, then making call was profitable if you do it properly every time. But here, you're still got another streak to come, and you got 50% of your stack involved after one call, so I'd have to let this go or shove.
All right, the river is the ace of spades, so our final board is jack of diamonds, nine of clubs, four of hearts, four of spades, ace of spades.
We improved! I'm shoving!
All right, but of course we check, and of course the villain goes all in.
Oh, God. Well, you know, again, I would have folded so before, and I would have had more money with my pocket with it, so it's 6,500 we have, and there's... You know, I don't know how much this guy had, but he has more than us, so that was a 7,000 bet at least. So you look at 26,000, you got six, so you're getting more than 4 to 1 your money again. Yeah, I mean, I mean, obviously I'm not folding here because I have no money left. I think I'm calling. I have three blinds if I'm wrong, if I fold, so I'm calling, but I would have never been in this situation because of what we were just talking about.
You know, what's fascinating about this hand is it's a total of 8 lines in my email, right? Uh-huh. We've gotten hands of the week where people have written War and Peace.
Yeah.
Descriptions, right?
Yeah.
And it takes us, and we get through it in 5 minutes on the show. There's nothing there. This is amazing that we've talked this much about this hand already, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to extend it here because I'm actually now seeing a reason to fold here.
That's hilarious.
Because, I mean, I'm looking at this board now. I mean, you know, I know I've been saying all along that we've kind of pot-committed ourselves here, but I was saying that because I thought we were going to get it all in on the turn somehow. I just didn't see a reason that we wouldn't, right? But we didn't. And now it's on the river. We totally biffed this thing. So we got a pair of nines and a king kicker. This guy has fired every single street. He's min-raised before. He's old. He's tight. It's not the 5 to 1 or whatever we have on our money now. I think the odds of us winning are astronomically worse than that.
You're hilarious today.
I mean, it's like a Mars Explorer. I mean, I'd have a better chance of getting to ride it like a mechanical bull than of us winning this hand here. And if that's the case, at least I fold here. I save less than bus fare. Maybe I can bum a couple of chips off some players later on and get back in this thing. But at least I'm alive. I think right now, I mean, this I don't even have to call over the postman. He's hanging out. He's railing me right now. And here, you want me to open that envelope, throw those last couple of chips in? Go ahead. I haven't sent it for you yet. I just don't... To me, at this point, it's not worth putting those last 65 in here. Now I'm going to be super amazing short stack dude. And try to build it up. I just, you know, it's just so weird how this hand unfolds, how much it changes, at least my opinion, maybe other people's.
Oh my God. So you have five big blinds, and you know you're beat. If you know you're beat, you have to fold,
right, so
because
you
have 6,500.
What do you think the chances are of winning this hand right now?
Zero.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would fold too, because, I mean, I think I would fold, But it's just so much money's out there, and what if he was bluffing? What if he had...
Well, what if? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
What if he had king-queen?
This is the mathematical calculation that Gundam says that we do that we don't realize we do, but we really do.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I mean, I just asked you what the chances are that we have this thing won, and you laughed and said probably zero.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think, too. But you're right. There is some number out there, percentage possibility that he's bluffing that we could win. I just think it's so remote that it's not worth putting our tournament life online here. Now, admittedly, I would have played every streak completely different. You would have played every streak completely different. But we got to play where we are now. And at this point, it's not just a simple chips in the pot calculation here. It is calculating what are the possibility that we are going to win this hand with no more cards to come, no more betting. And I think it's pretty close to zero. And it's pretty close to zero. I'm saving 6,500 because that 6,500 is like 650,000 units.
Okay, so five big blinds. We could rally from that. Probably
we could rally more from that than being totally ass kicked right here, which we are, right? You know,
probably. I mean, he could have eights. He could have king queen. He could have the same hand as us. I mean, there are some hands that we beat or we're tied with, but generally, how could this guy now go all in and be behind, you know? It's funny, and I see what you're saying about folding. It's just, at this point, now I take on the Scott Long turn man defeatist attitude and think, I only have 6,500 left. Here you go, it's yours. Do what you want with my chips. But at the same time, you're right, I could triple up on the next hand and be right back to where I was when I started this hand. So, who knows? But I would have taken that approach on the turn.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And that's why I say it's so fascinating about this hand, is on the turn, I am like, oh my gosh, get it all in. Are you crazy? I mean, I'll go home before I suffered through 10 big blinds. And then on the river, it's like, whoa, hold on. Five big blinds are looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, and I'm just the opposite, though. I mean, I would have been on the turn.
We still had an option of improving.
I would have saved that $5,000 the turn and had the $11,000 to go all in with rather than doing it with 65. But either way, I just every street I think was probably not. I would have folded on preflop, so I wouldn't have played the way he did. On the flop, I would have gotten out. On the turn, I would have gotten out, and on the river, I would have probably gotten out. But it depends how beat up I felt. I might have just said screw it and thrown it in there and hope he had eights. But I probably would have gotten out when the guy bets again the ace comes, because now it's what could he possibly have that I beat? And it's very few hands. So,
I mean, really, the only draws that are out there are the straight draw, right? There's still, we got four different suits on the board.
Yeah, king-queen is really it.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, normally I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the opponent here. I mean, even if he's firing, if we keep calling, generally it's because it's a draw. There's no draw really out there. I mean, I guess it could be king queen, but it's kind of remote. So he's got to think that we've got something here. So
to bet again.
Yeah. So if we check on the river, why would you put more chips in here? Because he's got to assume that it's a high likelihood that we're going to call, even though it does regard us all being all in. So he's got to have something too.
Yeah.
And if he's got something too, I mean, what does he have that we can beat? You know, it can't even be a four because there's two fours on the board now.
Yeah. Man, it's so funny now that it goes from I would have folded on the turn to thinking that I would not have folded on the river. But yeah, I guess I'm probably folding here. So sad. I would have kept my 5,000 and had 11,500 to play with. But so what happens?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's hankies all around on this. You know? I'm not happy about folding here.
Right.
Alright, so our hero says he can only beat a bluff and he folds with 6,500 behind.
Oh man, I guess we probably come to a consensus that's probably the best thing to do, you know, because you're really only catching a bluff at this point. And what bluff would it be? King, queen, 8-8? So, yeah, or the same hand as us, jack 9, which, you know, he's not min raising with jack 9.
Pre-flop. I mean, I suppose you're right. That is, I mean, I could see our opponent being on king queen and firing on the draw, and then knowing at the end that he's only going to win if he can bet. So I guess there's something to be said for that.
But the turn bet, though, is dubious if he had that.
Fairly, yeah. Exactly.
You know, gut shot with two overs, and you had already had somebody calling you. Another four comes. I don't think this guy's betting $5,000 again with nothing there. I think he's taking the free card and trying to hit his gutter or overs on the end. So, yeah, I don't think king-queen's his hand either. I don't think that's his hand. So I think this guy had, like, I think he probably had, like, queens or ace something, like ace-jack or something.
Yeah, ace-x he had his beat on the river, so,
yeah.
You know.
So, I guess it's a good fold. It's so weird. At first, I was thinking there's no way I'm folding because of the money I'm getting out of my money on the end. And I have a pair, and if I thought I was good, I was good. But that ace, I don't know if that ace really changes anything. I think that this guy had a hand before that. Because, again, if he was drawing or didn't have a hand, I don't think he bets the turn. I really don't. If tight player doesn't bet the turn.
It gives us more reason to not even have to think about it because he very likely, I mean, it's unlikely that he's betting ace-king this way, but, you know, if he was, now he's got his beat, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be different if the river was a tray or something, maybe. You know, then maybe I think about it a little bit more because he couldn't have improved, really, the Vetus. But
right.
The ace, I mean, it just completes so many hands.
I wish I knew what he min-raised with before, like in other hands or something.
Yeah.
You know, types of hands that he would min-raise with. But I think we are beat, and I think you're right. I think a fold is necessary. It's just that I would have preferred to fold earlier and kept more chips.
Can't argue with you there.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, thanks for the very enlightening hand of the week. And we are going to be happy to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner and enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And boy, you're going to have a lot of fun with Kings and Nines and Chinese poker.
Oh, man. That's pretty funny.
But everybody else, send us your hands of the week to podcast@neupmagazine.com. And we'll get it on the show and get you something great.
I want to thank Sarah from Poker News for joining us today. Pretty enlightening stuff there. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.